ever played it together before, but I knew the words, and I was feeling it in my bones, so I quietly sang along, singing it just for her. I wasn't trying to make a show of it, but Callie lit up. She smiled and danced with me while I sang to her, so I turned it up a little, sang a bit louder. The song was a duet, and Callie came in on the next verse, her voice full and clear. That special magic we had together filled the bar. We sang lyrics about love and taking a chance and letting it be, seeing where things led, just like we'd said before, sang it for each other while we danced. Applause erupted at the end of the song, but neither of us acknowledged the crowd. Just looked into each other's eyes, smiling. I was on some kind of high I'd never felt before, and I didn't want it to end. The cheers died down, a new song taking their place, Die a Happy Man. It was whiskey smooth with a slow beat. I pulled her in close and breathed in the scent of her hair. Felt her body pressed against mine, felt those damn lyrics in my soul. We moved slow, and I leaned my forehead down to touch hers. The fabric of her dress felt thin beneath my hands, barely concealing the curves of her body. I touched her, running my hands over her, skimming the line of what was decent. She tilted her chin up, and I kissed her. Instead of meeting my kiss with softness, she ran her fingers through my hair and parted her lips. I delved into her mouth with my tongue, tasting a hint of apple pie moonshine. The desire I'd fought so hard at first came roaring to life. The music, the feel of her in my arms, and the taste of her lips made my blood run hot. I was instantly hard for her, and for half a second, I thought about shifting so she wouldn't feel my erection through my jeans. But she pressed herself closer, rubbing up against me, and all I could think about were her words when we'd walked in. I'm not a teenager anymore. No, she was not. She was all woman, a woman who was currently driving me crazy on the dance floor. I leaned in to speak low into her ear. You're doing something to me, you know that?
Maybe you should be doing something to me.
Honey, you have no idea how much I want to.
Then what are you waiting for?
She nipped my earlobe with her teeth.
Take me home.
She didn't have to tell me twice. I grabbed her hand and led her straight for the door. We tumbled out into the quiet night, the air warm and still. She giggled, hanging on my arm as I led her to my truck.
I didn't finish my moonshine, she said.
I knew she was teasing, but I spun her around and pushed her up against the side of my truck, took her mouth in a kiss. This wasn't soft or sweet. It was me, rough and untamed, hard and demanding. I growled into her mouth, pinning her against my truck, and made her melt for me. Pressed my hard on against her. I didn't stop until I was sure she knew I was fucking her tonight. When I finally pulled back, her eyes were glassy and dazed. I'll buy you another one. Now, get in the truck. For the first time since building it, I regretted my house's location. It wasn't far from town, but my consciousness was filled with a haze of lust as I drove. More than lust, I wanted her, but not just for a quick fuck. I wasn't bringing her home to scratch an itch. I wanted to love every inch of her. Finally, we pulled down my long gravel driveway. I got out, and she didn't wait for me to open her door. Cash was out in his yard, but it was warm, and he had everything he needed, so I didn't worry about him for now. We rushed inside, and as soon as I'd slammed the front door behind us, clothes started falling to the floor.
She kicked off her sandals and slipped out of her dress. I tore my shirt off and paused with my jeans halfway down my legs, getting my first real look at her. She stood in front of me in nothing but a light pink bra and panties. Reaching behind, she unclasped her bra and slowly let it drop to the floor. The sight of those full tits and hard pink nipples short-circuited my brain. She bit her bottom lip and curled her finger at me.
"Get those pants off and come here."
"Yes, ma'am," I said, stepping out of my jeans. She backed up toward my bedroom, a wicked gleam in her eyes. I followed, like a man in a trance, devouring the sight of her. The air between us snapped with electricity, anticipation making my heart thump in my chest. Stopping next to the bed, she beckoned to me again. I licked my lips and grabbed my cock through my underwear, giving it a short tug as I approached her.
"Ooh,"
she cooed, her eyes on my cock.
"Big, dirty boy."
"You have no fucking idea," I growled. I grabbed her waist and hauled her against me, feeling her tits press against my chest, kissed her hard and deep, tasting the cinnamon on her tongue. She slid her hands across my shoulders to the back of my neck. Her skin was warm and soft against mine, the contact making my nerve endings fire, lighting up the primal parts of my brain. "On the bed," I said, giving her a light shove. She grinned, falling onto her back and scooting up the bed. I climbed on and kissed my way up her thighs, grabbed her panties with my teeth, and pulled them down her toned legs. "God damn, you're beautiful."
"I'm on birth control, but we should probably still use a condom," she said.
"Don't worry, honey. I got us covered." As much as I ached to be inside her, I took my time loving on her body. Kissed her hip bone and across the smooth skin of her belly. Made my way up to her tits. She moaned as I slid one hand down between her legs and licked her nipple. Sucking on her hard peak, I teased her clit with soft strokes, dipped a finger into her opening. "Damn, Callie, your pussy's wet," she moaned again.
"Gibbs, I've been wet for you all night. I need you to fuck me."
"Yeah?" I pushed my finger inside her, and she shuddered. "You need more of this, sweet girl?" Her only answer was a whimper. "I'll give you what you need, darling." I slid a second finger inside her, pumped them a few times to feel for what she liked. Her eyes rolled back with a groan, and I knew I'd found the right spot.
"Gibbs."
I sucked on her tits while I fingered her, getting her good and ready, enjoyed the feel of her nipple in my mouth, the taste of her skin. She rolled her hips against my hand, soft moans escaping her lips. I'd never been so turned on in my life. She gasped as I pulled my fingers out. I brought them to my mouth and sucked off her wetness. "You taste so fucking good." Her cheeks were flushed a delicate pink. She reached down and grabbed my dick, giving it a solid squeeze. I grunted at the pressure. "You need that, don't you? You need my cock inside you."
"So bad,"
she breathed. I leaned down, our mouths meeting in a messy kiss. She squeezed my dick again, and I was done playing. I tore off my underwear, grabbed a condom out of the nightstand, and rolled it on. She opened her legs and pulled me on top of her.
Without hesitation, I pushed my cock inside her, groaning as the heat of her pussy enveloped me. There was no waiting, no long, slow thrust while we sank into it. The tension between us was pulled too tight. I could feel what we both needed. We needed to fuck, and we needed to fuck hard. I was happy to oblige. She reached overhead to brace herself against the headboard while I drove in deep. My hips thrust, my muscles flexed. Her pussy felt so good, the heat and pressure overwhelming.
"Yes, Gibson. Fuck, that's good."
I kept going, hard, steady thrusts making her tits bounce. The pressure in my groin rose fast, but I didn't let it unleash. Not yet. She needed more, and I was going to give it to her. Leaning down, I found her mouth again, kissed her, sucked on her lower lip. She wrapped her arms around me, holding on tight, and drew her knees toward her shoulders. I drove deeper, slamming my cock into her, grunting with the intensity of it. Her pussy tightened with a rolling tremor.
"That's it, honey. You want to come on my cock?" "Yes, Gibbs," she whimpered. "Make me come."
"I want this pussy," I growled into her ear. "It's fucking mine. You hear me?"
All yours, baby."
Her fingers dug into my back.
"And that cock is all mine."
That was the hottest thing I'd ever heard in my life.
"Only yours, Callie."
She moved her hands down to grab my ass, pushing me deeper inside her. For a second, I thought about pulling out and turning her over, maybe getting her on her knees so I could pound her from behind, or lying down so she could ride me. Hell, she was pretty fucking flexible. We probably had a lot of options. But tonight wasn't about sexual acrobatics or mixing up positions. Tonight was about one thing and one thing only. Good, old-fashioned, dirty fucking. I felt the tension ease in both of us, anger and fear burning away in the heat of our passion. It was an outlet, a primal release of pent-up emotions. She needed it, I needed it, and together, alone in my room in the dark of night, we made a new kind of magic. Her body was new to me, but I let instinct be my guide. She was coming before me or with me, no matter what I had to do to get an orgasm out of her. Hard and deep seemed to be working for her, but I slowed down just a little, enough that I could really grind against her each time I thrust inside. That was what she needed. Her pussy tightened and her moans turned into uninhibited cries. Her fingers dug into my back while she chanted a breathy stream of yes, yes, yes.
"Yes, baby," I growled.
I drove in and held there, burying myself to the hilt. I needed to kiss her, to meld my mouth with hers while our bodies joined, taste her and feel her tongue lapping against mine. With our mouths still tangling, I resumed my rhythm. She kissed me like she was desperate, like I was oxygen. I drove harder, faster, feeling her body respond, the heat in her pussy rising. So tight, so hot. Fuck, I was about to unload inside her. I didn't know if I could hold out much longer. With a carnal moan, she came apart under me, her pussy clenched, pulsing with her climax. I rode it out with her, feeling the pressure in my groin intensify. Like a ripple through still water, all my nerve endings fired, the sensation in my cock staggering, and I came fucking undone. The most powerful orgasm I'd ever had ripped through me. My cock throbbed inside her as I burst, exploding with a loud groan. I thrust deep, bottoming out. With my face buried in her neck, I growled, muscles clenching, overpowered by the sheer force of it. My climax subsided, but I stayed inside her,
breathing hard into the sheets. Her arms were wrapped around my back, and she hooked her legs around my waist. "I love you," I whispered. Suddenly, not giving a shit that it was too soon to say it, I felt it deep in my soul, and I needed her to know. I knew all too well what it was like to lose someone before you'd had a chance to tell them how you felt. I wasn't taking that chance with her.
"I fucking love you so much, Callie."
"I love you too," she said, her voice breaking. "I can't let you go, Gibson. I can't."
I picked myself up so I could look her in the eyes. "You'll never have to, you hear me? I'm yours, and we're going to fix everything so you can stay." Tears leaked from the corners of her eyes, but she smiled, nodding.
"Okay."
"Okay." I leaned in and kissed her, soft this time. We were going to fix things. I wasn't sure how, but I was a Bodine. We were nothing if not stubborn bastards. I was going to find a way for her and for us. She was mine now, and no one was ever going to take her away from me.
Chapter 27. Maya. I woke slowly, coming awake with a deep cleansing breath. It felt like I was floating, enjoying the lake on a lazy summer day. But I wasn't surrounded by warm water. Instead, I drifted in relaxed bliss on Gibson's sheets. I was tucked up next to him, my back to his front, his arm around my waist. His chest moved against me with his soft breathing, and his skin was warm against mine. Still feeling a little loopy and sex drunk, I nestled into him. He tightened his arm around me, a contented moan rumbling in his throat. This man loved me. He'd said it, his voice husky in my ear. I hoped the memory of those words never faded. I wanted to be 100 years old and still able to recall his deep voice, whispering the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. I loved him right back. I didn't care what other people were going to think, whether it seemed too fast to fall in love. I didn't believe in those kinds of rules anyway. Quincy and Henna had taught me that. They'd always told me that I needed to find my own path, live my life on my terms. Hell, they'd eloped after knowing each other for a weekend, and they were one of the happiest couples I'd ever known. Gibson Bodine was mine, and I was his. And that was all there was to it. The problem of my father and my real identity had taken on new meaning overnight. The danger hadn't gone anywhere. I couldn't stay here if he was free. He'd find out the truth about who I was sooner rather than later. Convincing Bootleg I was Maya Davis had been a temporary plan. I was convinced Fanny Sue knew who I was, and if one person did, others would, too. It was only a matter of time before people looked closely enough to see me, saw past my scar and my altered nose, past my tattoos and dyed hair. They'd see the girl they'd lost. They'd see Callie. And going back to my life as Maya wasn't an option. I'd liked a lot of things about that life. It had felt exciting, but still safe. Working with musicians, songwriting, helping them find their power or their peace or their confidence again was fulfilling. I was good at what I did, and the people I worked with appreciated me. There was value in that. But proud as I was for having built a life for myself, given where I'd come from, this was what I really wanted. Home. Family. The man I loved sleeping beside me, his arm tucked around my body. I wanted Gibson, and I wanted him forever. And it scared the shit out of me to think the Kendalls could take it all away, that the people who should have loved me could hurt me all over again. Gibson had said we'd fix things so I could stay, and I'd felt his sincerity, heard the determination in his voice. I'd have to trust that we'd find a way. "Morning, love," he said, his voice rough with sleep. He nuzzled his face in my hair and kissed my head.
"How do you feel?"
"Amazing." I closed my eyes and took another deep breath. I was pleasantly sore between my legs, my body still sated. "How about you?" He curled in around me, hugging me with his whole body.
"So fucking good."
We relaxed in bed for a little while. But life didn't stop because we'd fallen in love. Cash needed food and attention. Gibson had work to do. So I brought Cash inside and made his coffee and breakfast while he showered. He roughhoused with Cash a little, crouching down to pet his tummy, then kissed me goodbye in the kitchen before heading over to his workshop. It was so easy to imagine this being our normal, our forever. Sharing coffee in the morning, kissing him goodbye, hearing the muffled sounds of his tools in the building next door. Living a life with him. Oliver called shortly after I'd showered and dressed. He'd been talking with Soraya Lynn, an artist I'd worked with before. She was writing songs for a new album, but running into trouble. It didn't sound like a full-blown emergency requiring a Maya intervention, so after I took Cash outside, I got her on a Skype call. I propped up my phone on the table in front of the couch and borrowed Gibson's guitar so I could strum out the melodies she was working with. Cash wedged himself behind my back for a snuggly nap. Soraya was off to a good start, but she'd hit a creative wall. With probing questions, I coaxed the truth out of her. She'd lost her favorite grandma a few months back, and she was still recovering from the loss. But instead of reaching into her grief and using it to fuel her creativity, she'd been trying to push it away, to separate her emotions from her songwriting. Her usual sound wasn't heavy or mournful. She was known for her upbeat, vibrant music, and she didn't know how these dark emotions fit. I encouraged her to try writing a fresh song and let her love of her late grandma be the inspiration. She didn't have to delve into the darkness of her loss to find inspiration and meaning. She could draw on the good things, on love and happy memories. Hours later, with my phone about to run out of battery and Cash constantly licking my face, we had a song. A soft, beautiful, heartfelt song that made Soraya sound like the musical angel she was. It still needed work, but I knew she could handle it. And if she kept that up, allowing her true emotions to meld with her creativity, she'd be just fine. Gibson came inside smelling of wood stain. He smiled and went into the kitchen to wash his hands, then got down on the floor to snuggle Cash. It was so cute and made my ovaries ache. He got up again and came back with two glasses of water. I took one gratefully and gulped down half of it. "Thank you. I didn't realize how thirsty I was."
"You all right?"
"Just worn out. I was on a call for most of the day working with Soraya Lynn. She's a singer and songwriter with Adelon." His brow furrowed.
"I've heard of her. Was she having trouble with something?"
"Yeah, but I think we broke through her wall."
"So they don't need you to go to—"
"She's in Nashville, and no. Besides, Oliver knows I need time. I told him I'm dealing with some big personal things." He nodded and took a drink of water.
"Is your boss still asking you about me?"
"About your record deal?" I asked. "No, he knows you're not interested." "You're not interested, right?"
"No."
"I'm not asking this to push you. I'm just curious. Why not?" He glanced away for a moment.
"That's just not me. I like playing in little bars like we do now, but if it was something bigger, I don't think it would be the same anymore, and I don't want that kind of life."
I smiled at him. "I know you don't."
"So you worked with her without going anywhere?"
Soraya? Yeah, why?
I'm just wondering if that means you could still do your job, but stay in one place at least some of the time.
I think I'll have options going forward. I didn't travel so much because I had to, necessarily. I wanted to. I was always bugging Oliver to send me somewhere new as soon as I finished every project. He rubbed his chin, his brow furrowing again.
I wouldn't hate traveling sometimes.
God, he was adorable. No?
As long as I was here enough to take care of my clients. And we'd have to think about cash.
So, you're saying if I traveled less, you could come with me?
I ain't saying I'd go on some world tour with a bunch of fucking head-up-their-asses rock stars. But if you need to travel to keep doing what you love, I think we can make it work.
My tummy tingled at this newfound and unexpected sense of contentment. Are we sitting here planning out our future? One corner of his mouth lifted.
I reckon we are. I told you, you're mine now. I meant it.
There was nothing I wanted more in this world than to be his. But the shadow of my past still lurked, threatening to enshroud us in darkness. You know we have bigger things than my job to deal with. There are other ways I can make a living, but I can't stay with you if... I trailed off. I didn't need to say it. We both knew.
I've been thinking about that. The sheriff can only do so much until he can get the attention of someone with the right pull. Jamie's looked into things, but she's a lawyer, not a detective. We both know this thing is at a standstill until someone comes up with real evidence against the judge.
I nodded. That certainly summed it up.
So we get some fucking evidence, he said.
Swallowing back the prickle of fear that tried to invade my thoughts, I nodded again. Okay, but what?
I've been thinking about that, too. Seems like the first place to look is that forensics lab. Maybe proving the judge was responsible for that false report would be enough to get the right people looking at him. Jamie couldn't reach the lab tech, but a phone call is easy to ignore.
True. What do you suggest?
A little visit.
He shifted, making his broad shoulders and chest flex.
He won't ignore me.
How do we find him? Wait, let me guess. You've thought about that, too.
You got that right, sweetheart, he said. I already got his name from Jamie and put Leah May on the case. If he uses social media, she'll find him. It's like her fucking superpower. That and getting my brother to quit being a mute.
Gibson had been right. Leah May's social media skills did seem on par with a superpower. The lab tech, Darren Covington, lived in upstate New York, not far from where the body had been found. He was currently on medical leave, and his social media accounts had been locked down. No recent posts or photos to be found. But a couple of days later, she found him, tagged in a photo with a friend. It showed him posing in front of a shiny new black Tesla with a buddy, both giving a thumbs-up sign. And the post had a GPS tag. It had been taken at a hotel a couple of towns over. It wasn't a guarantee we'd find him there, but it gave us a place to start. Gibbs cleared his schedule for the next day, and we left early before the sun was up. We had a heck of a lot of driving ahead of us, so we took my rental car. It was easier on gas. Shelby and Jonah had happily taken cash. It was almost surreal to be on this road with him. 13 years ago, his father had driven me along this same route. Shuddering, I watched the scenery go by. That blank space in my memory was still hazy, like I was looking through thick mist, not quite able to see what lay beyond, but well aware that something was there. I wasn't sure if I wanted to see. We located the hotel easily. It was nice, bordering on fancy, with a pool and overpriced room service. I'd been in places like it hundreds of times. And in the parking lot, a shiny new black Tesla. We parked in the lot and pulled out our phones, pretending to look at them as if we were just a couple of people distracted by the screens in our hands.
I did something like this once,
Gibson said. What, a stakeout?
That's a better term for it, I guess. I kind of stalked Abby Gilbert, trying to find out if she was you.
Did you really?
I knew in my gut she wasn't, he said. Her whole story was such bullshit. But that wasn't why I knew.
Then how did you know? He glanced at me.
I knew if you were alive and you could come back, you'd come see me. Even if it wasn't first, I knew you wouldn't reappear and then never show up in bootleg looking for me.
You're right.
But I still went looking for her. Needed to see her with my own eyes.
And now Abby Gilbert was dead. The thought sent a chill down my spine. A young guy came out of a side entrance and went straight for the Tesla. It was Darren Covington. A second later, Gibson was out of the car. I scrambled out and followed Gibson. He intercepted Darren in front of his car.
You Darren?
Gibson asked, his voice casual. Darren stopped in his tracks, his forehead tightening.
Who are you?
Gibson strolled up to him, his easygoing gait somehow more intimidating than an open threat would have been. He put his arm around Darren's shoulders.
I'm your new best friend, and we're going to have a little chat.
What the fuck's going on here?
Darren asked, his eyes widening.
Let me see if I can make this easy, Gibson said, his expression friendly. You're going to talk to us, and you're going to tell us the truth. We clear?
Are you threatening me? Darren asked. I'll call the police.
Go right ahead, Gibson said. I'm sure the police would love to see this nice new car of yours. How did you afford that beauty, Darren? Do lab technicians make that kind of money?
Darren didn't answer.
And does your boss know you're living it up at this swanky hotel? You seem awfully healthy for a guy on medical leave.
Fuck, Darren muttered.
Yep, I'd say so,
Gibson said, his voice going low.
Let's unfuck some of this situation, shall we?
Darren reluctantly led us back to his hotel room. The king-sized bed had been made, housekeeping had obviously been here already, and a glass door behind a mostly closed curtain led to a balcony. I peeked into the bathroom. Beige tile, neatly folded white towels and a large soaking tub, a terry cloth robe hung on a hook. Gibson's face was stony as he performed a sweep of the room before he nodded for me to sit at the small desk. He looked at Darren and pointed to the bed.
Sit.
Darren lowered himself onto the edge, his face tense with fear.
Are you going to hurt me?
Depends.
Gibson's stance was relaxed, his arms crossed loosely over his chest, but anyone with half a brain could see the tension he kept coiled inside.
Depends on what?
Gibson absently pressed his thumb against his middle finger, cracking the knuckle with a pop.
On whether you tell me what I want to know, and whether I think you're lying. See, Darren, I don't like it when people bullshit me. It's a waste of my time, and that just pisses me the fuck off.
I watched Darren swallow hard, some of the color draining from his face. His eyes flicked to me a few times, as if he were trying to decide why I was here. I just stared back. I wasn't going to let Gibson actually hurt the guy, but I could tell it wasn't going to be necessary. I'd seen too many people on the brink of losing it. I knew what it looked like when someone was about to crack.
What do you want to know?
Darren asked, his voice shaky.
You signed off on a forensics report that identified the remains of a young girl recently,
Gibson said.
I want you to tell me about that.
Another hard swallow from Darren.
My job was to determine the identity of the remains using dental records. I found a match.
Did you, though?
Gibson asked. A sheen of sweat broke out on Darren's forehead.
Yes.
Gibson cracked another knuckle.
Stop wasting my time, Darren. It's starting to piss me off.
Darren's eyes darted around wildly.
Look, it was a lot of money, okay? I had student loans up the ass. Who wouldn't have taken it?
Huh, Gibson said. Another knuckle crack. Enough money to pay off your loans and buy you an expensive new car? Did they put you up in this hotel, too?
I'm supposed to lay low for a while, and... Come on, man. That's my dream car. You aren't going to smash it up or something, are you?
I wasn't, but now I might, Gibson said.
Who paid you off?
I don't know his name, Darren said.
Gibson's gaze snapped to him and Darren flinched.
I swear, he never told me who he was. He showed up at my house after work one day and offered me money to fake the report. I said no at first, but it was a lot of money, and those loans were killing me.
Gibson pulled his phone out of his back pocket. Wordlessly, he tapped on the screen a few times, then held it out to show Darren.
Was it that guy?
I could see the recognition in Darren's expression even before he nodded.
Yeah, that looks like him.
Gibson pocketed his phone, then crouched in front of Darren, leveling him with a piercing glare.
You caused a big problem when you did that, and the people who paid you won't hesitate to get rid of you to keep you quiet.
Darren's face lost another shade of color. I wondered if he'd pass out, or maybe piss himself.
What do you want from me? I don't have the money. I paid off my loans and bought the car and...
Shut your pie hole,
Gibson stood.
Like I said, you're going to help us unfuck this. And when it's over, you might even get to keep that car of yours.
I don't understand. What do you want me to do?
You said you need to lay low for a while,
Gibson asked. Darren nodded. The corner of Gibson's mouth hooked in the barest hint of a grin.
I have just the place.
Chapter 28. Gibson. Leaning against Nicolette's bar, I chewed on a toothpick. My water sat near my elbow. The lookout wouldn't get busy until after 5. For now, it was me and a bunch of members of Bootleg's only biker gang, the Dirt Hogs. They weren't so much a gang as a group of balding, gray-haired old-timers who wore matching leather vests when they occasionally went out riding. They usually drank over at the still while their wives played bingo on Tuesday nights. But this afternoon, half a dozen of them had gathered here, taking up a table nearby.
Need something else, Gibbs?
Nicolette asked. Nope. She gave me a short nod.
I need to run into the back. Don't hit anyone while I'm gone.
I scowled at her. Of course, that was probably a fair warning. I'd hit a lot of people in this bar. I glanced at the time. Where the hell were my brothers?
Something's gotta give,
one of the old-timers said, his voice rising.
We can't keep living like this.
Wendell ain't lying. God's honest truth.
I ain't built for this. Well, what are we gonna do about it?
Wendell asked. Old Jefferson Waverly stood. I had no idea how old he was, but his back was still straight, even if his flannel hung off his now thin frame.
We take a stand.
I was bored enough to want to know what they were talking about.
Take a stand about what?
Our women,
Marvin Lloyd said, shoving a finger in the air like a politician making a speech.
We ain't taking this no more.
I shifted the toothpick to the other side of my mouth. What did y'all wives do now?
We ain't getting a moment's peace,
Marvin said.
It's nothing but lovemaking every single day. Why, I've had my willy wet more in the last couple of weeks than I have in the last 20 years.
Pulling the toothpick out of my mouth, I tried not to gag.
Jesus, sorry I asked.
A youngin wouldn't understand, old Jefferson said, shaking his head.
I don't know how they expect us to keep up with their raging appetites. Are y'all cracked? I know y'all's wives. You're telling me they're chasing y'all around for... I stopped before I said it.
For the sex,
Marvin hissed out in a loud whisper. I had no idea what was going on with the elderly of Bootleg, but I decided I did not want to know more. Good luck with that, I said, turning my back on them. They kept up their griping, made a shudder run down my back. Luckily for me, the door opened and my brothers finally walked in. What took y'all so long? Bowie started cuffing the sleeves of his button-down shirt.
I had a meeting. You know, the job I have with a schedule I have to keep.
Jameson didn't offer a reason for being late. He slid onto the stool next to me and rubbed his eyes. What's wrong with you? I asked.
Tired.
Jonah didn't look much better, which was odd because he was usually the healthy, energetic one, but he was sporting some dark circles under his eyes. Come to think of it, Bowie didn't look so hot either. Did y'all get drunk last night? I asked. You look like hell. They all glanced at each other, a mix of surprise and confusion crossing their faces. Bowie pinched the bridge of his nose.
I don't know about these guys, but it's Cassidy. She's been wearing me out.
You too? Jonah asked, and Bowie's face snapped to his.
I mean, that sucks.
They both looked at Jameson.
I ain't saying shit, he said.
Wait, is this some kind of weird bootleg thing I don't know about? Jonah asked.
But why would Shelby be in on it? She's not from here.
What the fuck are y'all talking about? I asked.
I have important business.
Bowie glanced around like he was worried about who might overhear, but none of the dirt hogs behind us could hear worth a damn.
Cassidy's sex drive has been through the roof lately. She wants it multiple times a day. At first, I thought I'd won the damn lottery, but now I'm fucking exhausted.
It is some weird bootleg thing, Jonas said, his eyes wide.
Shelby's the same. She can't get enough.
Really?
Bowie asked. Leah May, too, Jameson grumbled, pulling down the bill of his cap.
Truth be told, I didn't know a man could come that many times in a single week.
Wait, wasn't George complaining about the same thing?
Jonah asked. Devlin pushed the door open and came in, looking rumpled. His dark circles rivaled Jonah's.
Scarlet, too? Jameson asked.
Insatiable sex drive? Jonah added.
Devlin took a seat at the bar, his eyebrows knitting together.
How do you know that?
No one's watching, y'all, Bowie said, scowling. We're in the same boat. Seems it's all of them.
You bunch of pansy asses, I said. Y'all show up late, then you want to sit around and bitch about getting too much sex?
Clearly, you're either not sleeping with Maya, or whatever's happening to the rest of our girls ain't hit her yet, Bowie said. Trust me, Gibbs, you have no idea.
People sometimes said Bootleg was a strange place, and I usually disagreed. I'd lived here my whole life, couldn't quite imagine living anywhere else, so our shenanigans generally seemed normal. But this, my brothers and the dirt hogs all talking about their women suddenly running them ragged with out-of-control sex drives, that was fucking weird.
Maybe it's something in the water, Bowie said.
I gave the water Nicolette had given me the side eye.
Hey, Nick, you back there?
Nicolette poked her head out of the kitchen.
What? You been putting something in the drinks that makes women horny?
Good Lord, Gibson,
Bowie said.
Shut your damn mouth.
But has she, though?
Jameson asked, lifting his head. Nicolette looked at me like I'd just told her she should stop serving blackberry moonshine.
No, I don't think there is such a thing.
Bowie scrubbed his hands up and down his face.
Okay, Gibbs. Why are we here? I need to get home and see if I can catch a nap before Cass gets off work.
It was my turn to glance around, but the dirt hogs had all fallen asleep in their chairs. Old Jefferson let out a quiet snore. Still, I lowered my voice. I found the lab technician. That got their attention. Jameson sat up, Devlin leaned forward, and Bowie and Jonah both asked, "What?" at the same time. "The guy who matched the dental records," I said. "Someone paid him to fake the results."
"The judge?"
Bowie asked. "Not directly, but it was the guy who showed up in town asking me questions, the one she said worked for the judge." I still didn't want to say her name out loud in public.
"Holy shit," Jonah said.
"Do you have proof?" Devlin asked. "Will he talk?"
"Oh, he'll talk." I stuck the toothpick back in my mouth. Devlin narrowed his eyes at me.
"Gibson, you can't..."
The door opened again, spilling sunlight into the dim bar. Cassidy pulled off her aviators, looking mighty official in her uniform. I figured it didn't matter if she was dressed for work. She was a cop either way, so I wasn't going to worry about whether she'd get too official on me. Scarlett wore a Bodine Home Services t-shirt knotted at the waist. Her jeans were dirty at the knees, and she still wore her tool belt. Both girls made beelines for their significant others. Cassidy draped her arms around Bowie's shoulders and whispered something in his ear. He patted her hand, looking like he might be willing to chew his own arm off to get away. Scarlett was Scarlett, which meant she lacked subtlety.
"Hey, baby,"
she said, sidling up to Devlin and putting her hand in his lap. I couldn't see what she was doing, and I didn't want to know.
"For fuck's sake, y'all," I said.
"Can we focus? I got the forensics guy." Cassidy stood up straight, suddenly all business, all cop.
"What did you say?"
I repeated what I'd just told my brothers. Scarlett didn't stop pawing at Devlin.
"He'll talk?"
Cassidy asked, eyeing me warily.
"What did you do to him?"
I pushed the toothpick around my mouth again.
"We just had a conversation."
"Uh-huh."
Cass crossed her arms.
"He's fine," Scarlett said. "We made him very comfortable at the Red House last night."
Cassidy's eyes moved from me to Scarlett, then back again.
"You knew about this? Please tell me you didn't kidnap the lab technician."
"I didn't kidnap the lab technician."
"Well,"
Scarlett said, drawing out the word. I shot her a glare.
"It ain't kidnapping if he comes willingly."
"Oh my God,"
Cassidy said.
"What is wrong with you two? You can't kidnap someone and hold them hostage."
I rolled my eyes.
"He ain't a hostage, Cass, and Scarlett wasn't even there."
"Did he come here of his own accord?"
she asked.
"Mostly."
Her eyes went icy, and I knew I was skirting the edge of serious trouble. Cass was scary when she went cold like that.
"Mostly? Gibson Bodine, if you make me arrest you for abduction and unlawful imprisonment, I swear to God..." "Calm down, Cass,"
Scarlett said, interrupting her tirade.
"I talked to him. Gibbs didn't lay a finger on him. Probably gave him a good scare, but by the time they got to town late last night, he was on our side. We're hiding him from you know who."
"You know who?"
Cassidy asked.
"What is this, Harry Potter?"
"Well, I ain't saying it right here,"
Scarlett said.
"Just like I ain't saying the other thing."
I put a hand up. I didn't need those two getting in an argument about what we could and couldn't say in public. One of them was liable to say Callie's name by accident.
Empty bar or not, I didn't want to do anything to risk her safety. Okay, we get it. We still have to keep this quiet. This kid will tell the truth, especially if your dad can get him some kind of immunity or something. Keep him out of trouble for taking the bribe.
Poor guy is pretty damn scared,
Scarlett said with a laugh. Her face got serious.
Dev, maybe I should bake him some cookies.
Don't cook, we all said in unison. Scarlett glared at me like I was the only one who'd said it.
Fine, I'll buy some, but just because he's an almost hostage doesn't mean I can't be neighborly.
Cassidy closed her eyes in exasperation.
Don't call him an almost hostage, Scar. Guest, then,
Scarlett said.
I thought you'd be a lot more excited. This is a big break in the case.
Possibly, but if y'all do something illegal, I don't care how big of a break it is, it won't help us,
Cassidy said. This will help us because the kid's gonna talk, I said, my voice rising. I was tired of going round and round about this. He told me the truth, and he'll tell the sheriff. With his statement, maybe your dad can finally get the attention of the feds. Get someone on this case who can take the fucker down.
I'll talk to Dad,
Cassidy said.
But I don't know if it'll be enough if the judge isn't the one who bribed him.
I thought we weren't saying who it was out loud,
Scarlett said. Shut up, Scar, I snapped. Maybe the judge didn't, but the guy who did works for him.
Can you prove that?
Cassidy asked and kept talking before I could argue.
Gibson, I know. I want to take that sorry son of a bitch down as much as anyone.
Do you? I asked, my temper a thin twig ready to snap at the slightest pressure. Because all I'm hearing from you is a lot of shit about what we can't do and what won't work. And here I am, driving to fucking New York because law enforcement can't even do its damn job. Bowie stood.
Watch it, Gibbs.
No, fuck that. We know the truth, and that piece of shit is going to get away with it. You know what's worse? She can't even live her life. What would y'all do if you had to pack up and leave, huh? Where would you go? What would you do when life got hard and you needed your family and friends around to make it fucking bearable, but you couldn't go home?
I stopped shouting, and the bar went silent, except for the soft snores of the dirt hogs. Clenching my hands into fists, I looked down at the floor. My knuckles ached with the desire to hit something. I wanted the pain of it reverberating up my arm. I wanted to taste blood. But I wasn't about to haul off and sucker punch one of my brothers. Even I wasn't that much of a dick.
We're trying to help, Gibbs,
Cassidy said, her voice quiet.
It ain't enough, I ground out through my teeth. If she has to run again, I'm going with her. You hear me? She goes, I go. I just want y'all to know that. Without waiting for anyone to reply, I stomped out the door.
Chapter 29, Maya. I stared at the blank page in my journal. There were songs inside me trying to get out. I could feel it. How many times had I coaxed the words or melodies out of someone else when they were doing this very thing? A few questions, a little conversation, sometimes a glass of whiskey or a bottle of wine, and they'd push aside whatever it was that blocked them. Their creativity would break free, and they'd find a way to work through whatever had been holding them back. So why couldn't I do the same for myself? I'd tried. I'd used my own tricks on myself. Written down the questions I might have asked had I been talking to a client, tried to answer them. I'd meditated on it, done juice cleanses, and used crystals to realign my energy. I'd taught other people to crochet because I'd learned to do it myself, hoping busy hands would help free my mind. Nothing worked. The words never came out right. The fact that my creativity had felt blocked before I'd come back to Bootleg Springs made sense now. Callie had been locked up too tight. I knew there were things in my past that needed to come out, pain I needed to face. The logical part of me, the Maya part, understood that. But there was something back there I couldn't reach, Something in that box in my mind. Even here in the safe comfort of Gibson's house, I shrank back from it, flinching like there was a demon inside with claws and sharp teeth. If I let it out, it would rip me to shreds. I heard the rumble of Gibson's truck outside, so I shut the journal, shaking off the unsettling images. Cash jumped up and ran for the door, his tail wagging. Gibbs had gone to talk to his brothers about Darren Covington. So far, we'd only told Scarlett because we'd needed a place for him to stay last night. She'd been more than willing to put him up in one of her cabins for the time being. Leaving him there alone did mean he was a flight risk, but I didn't think he'd go anywhere. At first, it had been Gibson's intimidation that had swayed him into coming with us, but I'd talked to him on the long drive back to Bootleg. I hadn't told him who I was. Not yet, but I'd told him enough to make him realize he'd gotten into bed with some very bad people, and he seemed to be too worried about his own hide to question who I might be. He was foolish. He'd taken a large bribe and blown through most of it already. But he wasn't completely stupid. He knew the sort of people willing to bribe a lab tech to falsely identify a body were not upstanding citizens of the law. He wanted a way out. I'd told him we couldn't promise him anything, but if he helped us, we'd do what we could. The door burst open and Gibson barreled his way in like a hot wind blowing off desert sand. Without looking at me, he stalked into the kitchen and threw open the refrigerator, only to slam it again a few seconds later. Cash ran around his feet, but Gibson ignored him. "What's wrong?" I asked.
"Nothing."
Rage was coming off him like sparks crackling in the air. I got up but kept distance between us, like I was approaching a wounded animal in the wild. Cash seemed to sense trouble. He backed up and sat. "What happened?" I asked, my voice calm but not overly soothing. I didn't want him to think I was trying to calm him down. "Did Darren leave?"
"No."
"Then what?"
"It ain't enough. We have the guy who told the goddamn world that body was you, and they're saying it might not be enough. What the fuck do we have to do?"
"I don't know. We keep looking. Keep digging."
"And then what?"
He spun around.
"That bastard has been getting away with shit for years, decades even. The truth doesn't matter, we both know that. That's why you ran. Because even back then, you knew it was fucking pointless."
"I ran because I was a terrified child." He grunted something I couldn't make out and stalked past me, clenching his fists. His heavy footsteps pounded against the floor, and a few seconds later, the back door slammed shut. I glanced at Cash, and his head tilted to the side. "Yeah, Daddy's upset. It's okay, buddy. Just go lie down. I'll talk to him." Cash was either the smartest dog in the universe, or he just wanted to get back to his nap. He trotted over to his bed and lay down. I pushed the sleeves of my flannel shirt up to my elbows and followed Gibson. He stood with his hands on the porch railing, his back to me. His shoulders were bunched up tight, and I could practically see the anger seeping from his pores. "So we give up? Is that it?" I was done with this temper tantrum. "One thing doesn't go the way we thought it would, and it's over?" He didn't turn around, and his voice was dangerously low.
"That's not what I said."
"Maybe not, but that's what I'm hearing in everything you aren't saying. I know you're frustrated. I know you're scared." I paused, giving him an opportunity to argue with that, but he didn't. "I am too. But we knew the sheriff wasn't going to issue an arrest warrant based on Darren's statement. It's just the first step."
"I fucking know that,"
he shouted over his shoulder. I crossed my arms. "You don't have to yell. I'm standing right here." With a roar that made me take a step backward, he balled his fist and slammed it against the wooden beam. His knuckles came up bloody. "What are you trying to do?" I asked, my tone of voice still not changing. "Scare me? Make me leave you alone? Or are you just so mad you don't even know?" He whipped around, and if human eyes could glow red, his would have. His jaw was tight, the cords standing out in his neck.
Get the fuck out.
I didn't move. Didn't take my eyes off him. He was going to apologize for that later, but right now, he wasn't going to ruffle me. Had it been any other man in the world, I probably would have backed off just in case he snapped and I'd underestimated what he was capable of. I wasn't stupid. He was a lot stronger than me, especially with all that adrenaline coursing through his veins. But I wasn't backing down, not from Gibson Bodine, because even though he was out of control with rage, I still trusted him. You need to be real careful what you say to me right now, Gibson Bodine.
Or what?
Or you're going to have to live with what happens next. He put his back to me again, his hands gripping the railing. Blood ran down his fingers, but I doubted he could feel it yet.
Just leave me the fuck alone.
I sighed. What are you even mad about? Did something happen that you're not telling me?
No.
Then what? I said, finally raising my voice. What has you so out of control you're shouting at me and telling me to leave?
I don't know.
He barked, and suddenly his shoulders dropped, his aggressive posture softening. He looked down at his hand, spreading his fingers, as if he'd just realized he'd hurt himself. Why are you mad? I asked again, softly this time. He stood there for a long moment, breathing hard, leaning against the railing, his back to me. When he finally spoke, his voice was a normal volume.
Because I spent 13 years thinking you were dead. Because my father knew the truth. Because he was a shit father to us, but for some reason he decided to be your goddamn hero.
I stayed quiet, waiting. I knew he wasn't finished.
Don't get me wrong. If he was going to do one good thing in his life, I'm glad it was saving you. It's hard to feel anything good for that man. But I'm grateful he helped you. I just don't understand why. Why did he go so far out of his way to help a girl he barely knew when he couldn't even parent his own kids worth a damn?
I stared at his back, my heart breaking for him. He didn't know. But how could he? I kept avoiding the memories of that night, assuming everyone understood what had happened well enough that I didn't need to spell it out. His father had never told him the truth, and neither had I. He did it to protect you, Gibbs. He looked at me over his shoulder, a deep furrow in his brow.
What?
I took a deep breath, reaching into the box in my mind, drawing out the memory. This part was clear, the details sharp, even after 13 years. When he found me on the side of the road, I was heading to your place. I was running to you. I balled my hands into fists to keep them from shaking. I felt myself teetering between Callie and Maya again. When he stopped, I told him where I was going. I asked him to take me to you. He said no.
Why?
He said he was afraid of what you'd do if you saw me like that. He told me he was sorry, but he couldn't let you do something stupid and go to prison for the rest of your life. That's why he helped me. Why he kept me hidden and got me out of town in secret.
I don't believe that,
he said, but there was a quaver in his voice. He turned to face me.
He didn't take your secret to his grave because of me. He walked by your missing persons posters every goddamn day, and he knew you were alive. He was hearing from you with those damn postcards. He didn't keep his mouth shut for me. He helped a teenage girl run away, and he didn't want to get in trouble for it.
He kept my secret for so long for many reasons, Gibbs. Yeah, maybe one of them was to keep out of trouble, and he understood that my father was dangerous. After your mom died, that had to have kept him quiet, too. He shook his head and glanced away.
That's what Ginny said. He told her it wasn't an accident, but she didn't know whether to believe him.
See, he was protecting his family. And I'm telling you, right here and now, the reason he helped me in the first place was you. That was why he put me in his truck and hid me in that shack for the night. And why he convinced your mama to come out with bandages and blankets. Why he drove me all the way to New York in secret while the whole town was looking for me. A little piece of it was to help a girl in trouble. But really, he did all that for you. He did it to protect his son. Gibson's expression changed, his anger crumbling to pieces. His stormy eyes revealed the depth of his pain. A boyish innocence and desire for love long since crushed.
He hated me.
There was no more rage in his voice, only hurt.
He blamed me for his life not being what he wanted. He told me I was nothing.
Tears welled up in my eyes. His painful honesty was hard to hear. It made me ache for him and dredged up shadows of my own childhood trauma. It's awful that he treated you that way. But I don't think he hated you. I think he hated himself, and he wrongly took it out on you. I wish he hadn't, Gibbs. I wish he'd have been a good father to you. But I think there's a piece of his truth in what he did for me. Deep down, he loved you. Gibson took 3 quick steps and grabbed me, hauling me roughly against him. His legs buckled and we both collapsed to our knees. I wrapped my arms around his shoulders while he buried his face against my neck. His breathing was ragged, and he didn't say a word, so I just held him. Closed my eyes and gently rubbed his upper back. His muscular arms tightened, his hands fisting the back of my shirt. Tears streamed down my cheeks as I felt his pain with him, let it roll through me like a summer rain. I rested my face against his head, wishing he'd had better, wishing we'd both had better.
"Why are you still here?"
he asked, his voice muffled. I sniffed. "What are you talking about?"
"I'm no good, Callie. I don't deserve you."
"Why? Because you lost your temper and snapped at me?" I asked. "Gibbs, I know the difference between someone who's lashing out and someone who truly wants to hurt me. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to let you get away with it. You keep yelling at me like that, and I will get the fuck out." He pulled back enough to look me in the eyes.
"I'm shit at apologies. It ain't how Bodines do things, but I'm sorry. I didn't mean that."
I touched his face, feeling his rough stubble beneath my hand. Apology accepted. He didn't break eye contact, the raw vulnerability in his eyes making tears well up in mine all over again.
"I love you."
A tear broke free, leaving another hot trail down my cheek. "I love you too." And I knew, in that moment, that somehow we were going to be okay. Chapter 30, Maya. For a place that was supposed to be quiet, the Bootleg Springs Library was hopping. The hum of conversation filled the air. Not exactly outside voice volume, but much louder than the usual hushed whispers in a place like this. I went inside with my big handbag slung over my shoulder. The smell of food mixed with the scents of paper, leather, and lemon furniture polish. The library wasn't large, but it was cozy, with a neat front counter, rows of shelves, and natural light from high windows. I'd received no fewer than 6 invitations to June's book club, 9 if you counted the 3 times I'd been invited to the last meeting. I'd only just started the current book, but everyone, including June, had assured me I was still welcome. Gibson and I had paid Darren a visit earlier today, bringing him a few groceries and making sure he was comfortable and still willing to be cooperative. He'd gone from scared to reluctant participant in our strange and as yet unfinished plan to downright cheerful. No one in town knew he had any connection to the Callie Kendall case. To them, he was just a tourist named Darren. He told his family and friends he was doing a little traveling and proceeded to soak up all Bootleg Springs had to offer. As far as he was concerned, for now, he was getting a free vacation. I wasn't sure how I felt about that, considering what he'd done, but at least he was being cooperative. And we didn't have to try to hold him forcibly. Cassidy and her father were especially glad about that. Pausing near the front, I gazed at the two long tables set up in an open space near the fiction section. They were covered with food, potluck style. Casseroles, jello molds, baskets of muffins and buttermilk biscuits, fried chicken, at least four different pies, and numerous other dishes, baskets, and containers crowded together along the rectangular surfaces. It was an enormous amount of food, but the library was packed with people. It looked like